Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 21st, 1996. In the fireside room this morning, our speakers are Jeff and Emily Kirsten Greep. Today they will be continuing their series entitled Communication and Gender. Today's session number is 3 and is titled Genders Together, Doing Relationships. Let's listen in.
The third session of 5, today is the last information dump session. The next two, beginning tomorrow, of course, at 3:45, we move into the afternoon tomorrow, and then back at this time again on Friday, will be sessions about, so given all this information about the changeability of gender and our responsibility for our own gender and other people's, what should we do in terms of ourselves and in terms of raising our kids and the kids of other people? So the next two sessions will be a lot more solicitive than perhaps these have been so far. We understand there have been some interesting conversations occurring in the village. We keep hearing about them second and third hand, and sort of knowing chuckles, and we hear our names sort of muttered under people's breaths as we wander around town. Oh, I gotta try this one on Emily. I see what she's doing. And that's exactly what we'd hoped would happen. So far this has just been great. Anyone who's been asking, how's the session going? We've all been saying, great. It's really fun. So today we're going to talk about genders and relationship, and I don't think no one did say anything else before we started. Okay.
Did you say roll the tape?
Oh. Hey, Larry, roll the tape.
Oops. Okay. Well, we're going to start today. We're going to be talking about...
Can I give a little preview? That's what I've got.
Oh, yes.
We're going to start by talking about some commonalities between relationships, or the commonalities that men and women hold in friendships, and then move into some reliable differences in the ways masculine and feminine people communicate. They're almost like two different languages. And then the real point of the day is to see where those two languages often come into friction, come into contact, four real predictable areas where men and women real reliably misunderstand each other and get tense with each other and don't really understand. It's like we suddenly, our language differences get too great, and we create trouble where maybe there doesn't need to be trouble. And we really want to hear a lot from you today around those kinds of things in your own lives. So that's what we're up to. And we're going to start with some commonalities. I'll be the scribe, Emily will be the solicitor.
Yeah. Because I think our interest is to be sure that we do stay focused on what do we have, you know, we're looking more for what we can do to create ways that gender doesn't make us separate, but instead can enhance and give us a chance to develop together, that we really loved having a chance to be able to talk about what do we have in common. And what I wanted to start with is that, at least in the reading we've done and the studies we've looked at, we changed the order of how we're going to do this. I'm not going to do this first. What I want to do is hear from you what you look for in friendship. And this can be same sex or between sexes. What are the things you look for in a friendship? What are the qualities that are important to you in a friendship?
Openness.
Openness.
Sense of humor.
Sense of humor.
Warmth.
Warmth.
Eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
Trust.
Sharing interests.
Sharing interests. How are you doing back there? Let's let him get caught up for a second.
Eye contact. Trust. Who said trust?
Trust.
Acceptance.
Acceptance.
Say good listener and also a good questioner.
Integrity.
Honesty.
Honesty.
Somebody you can let down your guard with and be completely honest with your personality.
Okay.
Stop for a second. Look how much bigger the women's list is.
Yeah, come on, you guys.
Wait, no. Who do you think thinks about relationships more? Who talks about relationships more? Who's got a bigger vocabulary? Who can see things in relationships that other people can't see?
Depth.
Somebody that doesn't push my buttons, doesn't make me angry to be around, I don't know what that would be called. But yeah, it's something that makes me feel comfortable.
Okay.
A comfort with silence.
Mm. Ooh, that resonated. Comfort with crying babies. Who really can stay?
Someone who will share the responsibility of the relationship.
Mm. No, wait, this isn't...
Respect.
Ooh, respect.
Adventure.
Adventure. Ooh.
Adventure.
Uh huh.
Forgiveness.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Intelligent.
Listener.
No dumb friends.
I'm sorry. There was somebody back there.
Listener.
A listener.
Affectionate.
Affectionate. Oh, we got a few extras. Okay. Okay. There are probably a million more, but I think I'm gonna. We have lots we want to cover today, so I don't.
But we're not gonna race.
Okay. But one of the hopes I think we had, but I realized what we wanted to find were commonalities, and what I realized is just because a woman said trust doesn't mean a man wouldn't find that an important thing, but since it was already said, a man might not say it again.
Right.
But I think Jeff's observation is, you know, exactly, look at that list, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. But when we did our reading and looked at it, the thing that all the studies say are the key qualities in friendship relationships for men and women are really the same. Men and women look for the same things in friends and in relationship. It's not this mysterious thing. The five or four that the reading we were using came up with was people looked for intimacy, which I think includes, you know, are in pieces of all of this. Acceptance, trust, and help are the four things people look for in friendships, and that crosses the male-female, masculine-feminine boundary. And so I think that that commonality for us is important to know. We're looking for the same things. We're not kind of on a quest for something different. We're looking for the same things in our relationships, and I think that's important to keep in mind as we look at places where maybe we don't do as well at it, because we do have the same goals. So.
And the key comes in, the change comes in when you realize that intimacy looks different and sounds different for masculine and feminine users, for people who use these different languages and different codes. Am I being intimate when I'm washing my wife's car, for example? Am I showing support? Am I being loving? Is it at the expense of a conversation that my wife would like to have about the relationship? So in that case, maybe my action is read as avoidance of the relationship or whatever. So I think this is the session that a lot of you expected when you saw a week on communication and gender. You expected, I would bet, they're going to tell us how men ordinarily communicate, how women ordinarily communicate, and some of the very funny ways that these two things come together. I'd suggest to you that male and female, or masculine and feminine communication is really cross-cultural communication. If instead of thinking of men and women, or masculine and feminine, perhaps you would think of Burmese and Italian. And think of a Burmese person and an Italian person with wonderful intentions toward one another, who want intimacy, trust, acceptance, and help from one another. And we walk up to one another and, how are you doing? What are you? You know, we have no idea how to do this with each other. If you really think of it as different languages, suddenly I think it makes a little more sense. The biggest difference between male and female, or masculine and feminine styles, this is really hard for me to keep those two separate. Male, female, masculine, feminine. I intend to be talking about masculine and feminine. The biggest difference in relationship is that women tend to engage in relationships face to face, whereas men tend to engage in relationships shoulder to shoulder. Do you understand those two metaphors? What does that mean?
Women look at each other and they're walking side by side.
Okay. Carry the metaphor a little further. What are women doing when they're talking to each other? What is a relationship to a woman? Feminine style.
Well, they're focusing on each other.
And talking about?
Each other.
Exactly. Men, what are we doing?
Nothing.
Working together.
Working together, talking about things. What if I turn to a man? What if I turn to a man and start doing face-to-face things? You have a very interesting face. I like you a lot. Is that an odd sort of interaction for two men to have? Two masculine people to have. Excuse me. Okay? That's not a normal interaction in our culture. Let's not say it's a bad interaction. It's just something that would cause people to kind of, what are you doing? You know, it doesn't achieve intimacy often between men. I've run into that before. You don't tell a male friend that you like him. You just keep doing stuff with it.
Don't men usually triangulate and they have a third object that they talk to?
Is that been your experience?
Yes. They'll talk about the basketball game.
Uh-huh.
And in the talking about the basketball game, if you can read between the lines, they're talking about how they feel.
I've become very baseball literate in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that that's really improved my ability to get along with men that I don't know. That you can sit down and go, man, Amaral is not hitting worth a stink.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, geez, but that Cora's no better. And suddenly you're in a conversation with this person. And you know, later on you might say, you know, after half an hour, you might say, I'm Jeff. And I'm Bill. You know, there's that. And you got this relationship going, and you haven't talked about yourselves once. So that's something that goes on. So I give you four characteristics just to sort of unpack this notion of face-to-face or shoulder-to-shoulder. Women, when you're thinking of a relationship as a face-to-face thing, you're thinking of communication is central to the relationship, that what the relationship is communication between people. That's what communication is for, is it's the relationship. When we're talking, we're in relationship. If we're not talking, the relationship is in trouble. Second thing, talk is expressive and disclosive, ordinarily in a feminine style of communication. Keep calling me back to that masculine feminine thing, because that's where I want to be. You tend to talk about how you feel and those kinds of things with each other. Women tend to discuss a friendship's value. If you're happy with your friend, you tend to tell your friend, man, I'm glad you're my friend. You probably wouldn't say man, I'm glad you're my friend. But, you know, I really like being your friend. I'm glad we get to do this so often. That's part of what I'm going. And that women's friends tend to cover more than one sort of category. By contrast, men have work friends, sports friends, music friends, family friends. You know, we tend to have narrower scopes in our friendship, whereas women's friendships tend to be broader in scope, if you understand what I mean by that. So that's one difference between male and female. Three others about men, that for men, activities are central to the relationship, not communication. Communication isn't what makes us a relationship. Doing stuff together is what makes us a relationship, but that's what's important. And we talk, as you mentioned, on less personal topics. We talk about sports, money, politics, things that aren't necessarily disclosive and expressive about ourselves. That's a way of having a safe relationship. And that rather than talk about a friendship's value, men tend to assume a friendship's value. And that to start talking about the value of a friendship, how much I enjoy Neil's company, for example, if I start talking to Neil about that, I'm running the risk of jeopardizing the friendship by talking about it too much. Okay, so you can see right away one of the areas where men and women often come into conflict. We'll talk some more about that a little bit later. Is it still me? Okay. So I want to make one other point here, and then we'll give you some more specific information about male and female styles of communicating, what it looks like. I want to give you some four ways in which those different languages often come into conflict or generate some sparks. And then we want to let you talk to each other for quite a while today about stories you have that fit these encounters. We're going to ask you in those small groups to pick one or two stories that you're hearing within that group that you think are really worth sharing with the big group. So we're going to hear a lot of stories today about these kinds of things, and maybe one of two significant learnings will happen today is that you will leave saying, I am not alone! I am not alone! I am not the only one who has this kind of argument with my significant other all the time. Okay? So maybe we'll hear a bunch of stories today and you'll have that sense. So another way to think about men's and women's masculine and feminine communication and differences between them is that women speak and hear a language of connection and intimacy. Okay? That's what communication is for. It's for being intimate, it's for making connections. Okay? So that's the language. That's what it's for. That's what the rules are for. Men, do we hear a language of connection and intimacy? Not necessarily. We may, but masculine users, sounds like drug users, doesn't it? Like masculine users hear a language of status and independence. So that when I'm interacting with someone, what I'm often listening for is, ooh, he just outdid me. I better come up with something better. I'm really prone to this, by the way. I like to one-up people in a funny sense. That's one of the things I do. I'm very masculine in that way. So that men hear and speak a language of status and independence. Women are listening for connection and intimacy. And that we use communication for two very different purposes. So you can see how, you know, we do this a lot.
Hello, honey.
You trying to take the floor from me? I mean, what's going on here? So we're going to talk specifically now about some of the things. Let's just hold it there like this. We'll talk about some of the things that characterize masculine and feminine styles of communicating. And we're going to alternate here. This is like MTV. We're going to do quick edits today, okay? Quick edits. So you get sick of looking at me, that's great. Here's Emily. Tired of looking at Eric, great. Here I am again. And we're just going to pass the sheet back and forth, too, because I guess that's what we have our stuff on.
Okay. One just quick aside. As we talk about masculine and feminine forms of communication, one of the places I really notice changes in that, and not ones I particularly like, probably because I'm really feminine in my ways of communicating, but when you women working with women, how many of you work with supervisors or a lot of other women? Do many of you do that? I think that a lot of masculine tendencies are coming into the workplace, maybe because the workplace was mainly masculine before we got there. And it's a real confusing thing. I'm used to being friends with the people I spend my day with. And when I suddenly find people who feel real boundaries about work ending, and not, you know, it's a real interesting sort of new thing. But anyway, that's an aside, sorry. Ready? Okay.
I'm gonna write them down.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. The first one I'm going to talk about is that, and Jeff brought this up, it's because it's really key. Women's communication fosters connection. That's what it's about. That's what we try to do when we're talking in feminine ways. And one of the ways that is probably the easiest example for people to know is we tell each other stories when we're doing that. I was thinking about Tim was up visiting us yesterday, and he was telling me about something that had happened to him, and I don't know if everybody knows about your fire or your losing. Anyway, all his stuff got taken. And so I, you know, after hearing his story, told him a story of when I lost everything. And that's a real feminine thing to do. It's like, I understand, I know how that must feel, you know, because I've been through something the same way.
Men, on the other hand, we usually speak to display some kind of skill or knowledge or ability, that's what speaking is for. It's an opportunity to hold the floor and to be seen and noticed and appreciated for something that we can do. Let's see, does this resonate? Just sort of smile and nod if you start to recognize some of these things, whether in your partners or in yourselves. Okay. Oh, and the other piece of that is, since the reason I'm communicating is to show you how wonderful
Jeff,
I am and
Jeff,
how what I know and what I'm aware of and all that kind of stuff, that the flip side of that is that I don't disclose my weaknesses to you. I don't come to you and say, you know, I'm really bad at this. Because then that's like, I'm really bad at this. Go ahead, hit me right here. That's how men think of that, is I'm showing you a weakness. Go ahead. So that's the flip side.
All right. Women use communication, or women, feminine communication shows support. We express understanding of the situation, we express feelings, we talk about the feelings involved in a situation. Does that, same sort of thing. We're looking for connection and to show support. We're not, okay.
I
want to go faster. Yeah. We're going to be at this forever.
Okay.
Two.
Oh, thanks. Men are usually communicating to achieve goals. That's one of the things we do is, you know, aimless communication doesn't do much for us. We want people to get to the point, you know. Is there something to fix here? Let's talk about it. Let's fix it. And then let's go have coffee. You know, let's just be done with this thing. So we want to achieve some goals.
Okay. The other thing, in feminine communication, you're paying attention to the relational level going on. It's important to have equality within the relationship, and so it's important to focus on the feelings and on the relationship. It's not that you're not hearing the message, but you're focusing on the all the things that go with that. So you're looking at all the pieces instead of just at the words. And so you solicit things like, how did that feel? Those sorts of things in feminine communication.
So I would say something like, how are you? Or she would say something like, how are you? And I'd say, I'm fine. And what would be the appropriate response? As a feminine user, you would say,
are you sure?
Exactly. What's wrong? Are you really fine?
May I? Sure.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I hardly ever see that.
Masculine communication style exhibits conversational dominance. That's one of the things that we're about. Men, we use communication as a means of holding the floor and staying in the spotlight.
Okay.
Ooh.
In feminine communication, we work to sustain the conversation. That was a real good example of it, too. Somebody gives you an answer, and you say, but how did it feel? Jeff and my big joke with me is that whenever we're around friends, I'm the one who always asks how their relationships are. He never does. And it's always sort of, and then I solicit more. It's just that's important to know. And Jeff always wants to know. He just would never ask.
Exactly. And I'm always in the room when she asks. And then Emily will ordinarily ask and then say, it's so embarrassing, I always ask these questions. But then she goes right back to, so, what is it? Where am I, four? Men tend to be not very tentative, or masculine style is not very tentative. If we have an opinion, we tend to just express it and say, oh, no, that doll, he's just a loser. You know, but that's what you'd say. And we don't often use hedges or qualifiers. We don't walk up to the engine of a car and say, well, I don't know much about carburetors, but, you know, well, we might. But we certainly offer our opinion. Okay, so we tend to be a lot more assertive and not very tentative.
And so I'll just offer the exact opposite of that, the tentativeness within feminine communication. And the problem with tentative speech is that it can often, it's one of the big misinterpretations, that it's seen as not showing confidence and stuff, although what it does is it leaves the door open. A tentative answer or question opens the door. I skipped down, yeah, because I thought I might as well. That, you know, it opens the door, it lets the other person give an opinion. You're not sort of making a statement that just says, you know, I'm going to the store in a half an hour. Instead, I'm going to the store in a half an hour. Would that be okay? You know, sort of, would that be okay?
I was thinking of going to the store in half an hour.
Yeah. Well, are you or aren't you?
I see. There's the message. So are you going? All right.
These hit real personal notes, don't they? Don't we all live this stuff all the time?
Male, masculine style tends to talk about more abstract and universal things. More abstract and universal things when you talk about them. Masculine style.
Oh, I lost my place. Okay. This works well. Women tend to be more personal and more concrete. We have anecdotes, we disclose. Not women necessarily, but a feminine style is to disclose. You are vulnerable. You are the one who puts your neck out there pretty early on and says, see, there's my wound, or there's my most vulnerable point. And it's developing in the relationship that you didn't go for it. You left that there, and you left me safe. And so that is a real important part of the feminine mode of communication.
So you go like this, and the other person, if they're interested in a relationship with you, kind of goes, oh, let me help you with that. Let's look at that.
If they're feminine.
I'm going to talk about, right, feminine style.
If they aren't feminine, it might be very threatening.
Uh-huh. You sort of look at it and go, I got that one on her. You know,
yeah.
So I can use that if I have to. That really bugs her. Okay. And one last thing about a masculine style is that masculine users tend to have sort of minimal response cues. So if I'm listening to Mr. Halvern here and he's talking to me, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to be going, interesting, yes, how'd you feel about that, that eventually he'd sort of, you know, look quizzically at me and say, shut up, if we're both masculine users. But so it's more appropriate for men to sort of go, yeah. And that's more characteristic of a masculine style.
We're not used to using this, and I hope it doesn't look too awkward. We're trying to help someone who uses that for hearing, so we want to be sure everybody can hear what's going on. It's so important. Anyway, and the final is that feminine communication is responsive. It includes, works to include others. It works to affirm others. And there was one other word I really liked with that. And it values others. So it's trying to include and value and show all those pieces. So
we learn different rules as users of the masculine and feminine languages or styles. We learn different rules for the purposes of talk. What's talk for? If you're a user of masculine style, it's a way to achieve status and maintain your independence. If you're a user of the feminine style, it's a way to make connections and achieve intimacy. And when the two start working across purposes, we come up with...
ta-da.
Yeah, exactly. Some really interesting
things. The exercise, which is pretty fun.
Well, let's talk about the four fingers first.
Right, that's what I figured. Okay. Real quick. Can we put those on the board somehow, too?
Sure.
Do we want to keep these up there and maybe just put the... We could just list the four below.
Okay.
They just might be nice for a reference when you're getting into your small groups. You might want to look back and sort of rethink about them.
For how many of you is small groups a dirty word?
Oh, shoot. Yeah,
that's okay. They can be a small group together and they can just...
Not too many. And these will be better small groups than some I've been in. When we started planning this together, I was just... I'm totally phobic about small groups, but you have all just had a great time in small groups this week, it seems, so I'm not... Okay, we're going to talk about some of the common misinterpretations that happen, four of them, and there are probably more, and some of these may resonate with you really well and some may not, but we're going to do four kind of the biggies and let you then get into your groups and talk about where you see them. The first one is troubles talk. When you have troubles, when there are problems and you need to talk, not in the relationship, not within the relationship between the two people who are talking, but when you're talking about troubles. I'm trying to think of an example. Shoot, I had one in my head and I lost it.
You came home from work.
Okay.
Bombed.
Okay, I came home from work really unhappy. Something had happened at work, felt bad. It didn't happen to me directly, it happened to someone else, but I felt bad about it. Talked about it. If I were talking to someone, or I'm just going to go ahead with the masculine, feminine. I come home, I'm talking in a feminine way, I've had problems, I've had a really bad thing. A masculine response might be, hey, don't feel bad, things like that happen. What I would hear if somebody said that to me is, I'm being totally dismissed. The feelings that I'm expressing, the things I'm saying, aren't being heard at all. I'm just not being heard. What a masculine person might hear if I came in and said these things would be, I'm not doing this very well. I wasn't going back and forth before. Sorry, I'm getting it, but... The feminine person would be imposing, sort of demanding that you pay attention, stealing center stage, and all that sort of thing.
Well, that's if I came and told Emily a bad story.
Right. And I said, gosh, that happened to me once too. I remember when that happened.
Showing support, making connections, trying to show how we are, alike in our experiences. But what I would hear if I were using the masculine style is, well, don't one-up me. Fix it. And when I'm listening to a woman tell, if I'm masculine, I hear a feminine description of troubles, what's my inclination?
To fix it.
Exactly. It's now an explicit part of our conversations that when M comes to me and says something crummy happened at work or somewhere else, I ask early on, now is this something that I get to fix? Or am I just listening? And we mean it as a serious question.
It's a serious question.
And it makes it so much easier to say, okay, good, I'm turning off my should reflex right now and I'm just going to listen. But it has to be explicit.
Yeah, it does have to be explicit in our relationship anyway. And if I were talking to another feminine person, I wouldn't have to say that. Wouldn't have to have that warning.
They know.
In showing support, feminine people want to talk for comfort. When they come in and want support, I had a really tough day, something went wrong. If I'm being feminine, what I want is to connect. I want maybe a hug. I want connection and support and caring. And that's what I'm looking for. A masculine person, if they're having a tough time, wants a minimal amount of response, mainly because that respects their autonomy. It doesn't sort of get in there and say, I want you to probe and look at this. That feels really like an invasion of space and privacy. They want to keep their autonomy. They want to feel like they're still handling it. They just, you know, they are going to tell you as much as they want to say. You shouldn't ask probing questions. And
I thought of a good example just now.
Okay.
What happens when you appear to hurt yourself as a masculine person? You know, you whap your thumb really hard with a hammer, and somebody else says, "You okay?" What's your response? No, that really hurt. You don't say that. You say, "No, I'm fine. I'm okay. I'll be okay. I'll be okay. No, go away. I'll be okay. I'm fine. Hey, go okay." But that's the masculine thing, right? Respect me. I'm okay.
And I'm sort of like the 3-year-old who says, "Look what I did to my shin. It's a ridge the other day."
She's Tori get along great. Em came back from her hike up the ridge the other day and said, "Hey, Tori, I got a bunch of new scratches on my leg." And Tori's like, "Oh!"
It's very fun. I finally had somebody who was interested. Nobody else used to care. The point of the story, this one, boy, this one strikes close to home in our house. Point of the story is a feminine person tends, when they're telling a story or giving information, to give a lot of information. You give the background. If there's a person involved, you might tell what color their hair was and how their relationship is going. And you might tell, you know, what you had for lunch while you were talking about the incident that happened 2 weeks ago to somebody that both of you knew.
If the Bible was written by women, we'd know what Jesus looked like.
And we'd really know what his relationships with all those other people were. Masculine people tend to be much more sequential, much more straightforward. It's sort of, it's real linear. You know, this happened first, then this, done. And so probably some of our worst feelings hurt and arguments in our masculine feminine communication is Jeff going like this. You know, would you hurry up? You know, what's the point? It's like, well, the point is you need to know all these pieces first or it won't be a good story. You know what I mean? The other is relationship talk. Finally, is relationship talk. Women or feminine people consider, as Jeff mentioned this one before, if you're talking, your relationship is working well. As long as you're communicating and that's going on, things are going all right. For masculine people, you only discuss the relationship when something's wrong. So if I say, in my very feminine way, "Jeff, I want to talk about something. I'm worried about something," or not worried. "I want to talk about something in our relationship." This poor person's response is, "Oh my gosh, what's wrong? You know, and what are you going to say? What did I do? What did you do?" And
especially when she says, "I want to talk tomorrow."
Then he asks for a preview, so he knows whether it's a good story or not. But anyway, those are the four. And I think, you know, we gave some examples from our relationship. I think all of us could get examples from many relationships in our lives, from work relationships to, you know, friendship relationships to all sorts. And that's what we want to give you a chance to talk about now.
I want to say one more thing.
Oh, sure.
About relationship talk, what struck me is that the reason men only want to talk about relationships when they're masculine people, excuse me, what did I say?
Men.
Yeah, thank you. Is because what do we use communication for? Instrumental things, yeah, to fix things. So unless there's something to fix, why talk about it? If it ain't broken, don't talk about it. That's the point. So that's the reason why we often don't want to talk about relationships unless something's wrong.
Right. And we like to talk about them because
it's pretty anal.
It's fun.
Well, you and I didn't think you were talking about
And this isn't fair. We're setting this up. We're talking about sort of extremes in our own relationship. I think when I met Jeff, it was the first time I'd met a man who could out-talk me on relationship. I suddenly had real empathy for the men I'd been in relationship for. And said, "Can't we wait and talk more later?" Now I know how this feels. Jesus. I feel like I should write them all letters and
see,
say,
we're like
oh,
those
so
people
funny.
In New Guinea. We do a lot of stuff backwards in our relationship.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'm the homebody.
Yeah. Okay, so we were thinking the best way to do this would be to break into groups of maybe 5 people and do what...
No spouses.
No spouses?
No spouses.
Oh, that's true.
No spouses.
That would be good. No, or partners. Yeah, no partners.
Oh. Get with people you don't know.
Get with, or even if you know them, maybe you don't know their stories as well. And tell each other your stories. Talk about how it works, how, stories that have happened with you around troubles talk, showing support, getting to the point, or relationship talk. And then out of your group, bring us the couple, you know, one, two, or three, that really strike you all as being kind of, well, stories that we should be shared with a larger group. We didn't say how long we're going to do this.
No, we didn't.
What do you think? We don't
have...
That
was a nice little feminine thing, wasn't it?
Well, we got... I have 10 after 11. What do you have?
Almost 10 after.
Well, let's say 10 minutes, and then let's have a good 10 minutes of stories and go back out into the world.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, 10 minutes. So if you want to just turn around where you are or move around a little bit, either
And
way.
If you're stuck without a group, go like this. Look for other people going like this.
One of the women said her closest friends are the friends she does things with. And so these really aren't male and female. Just to sort of remind ourselves that some of them, because it's how we're, you know, how we learn to communicate, does often follow our sex. Because that's how our moms treat us and our dads treat us and our teachers teach us and things like that as we're growing up. That's not a clear, that's not why. It's not our biology that has determined how we're going to communicate with each other. So to keep that in mind. So let's hear some stories. I want to hear the stories. So who wants to start? Let's hear, what did you do?
Start with the marginalized people on the balcony.
Okay, that's a good idea. We don't see you up there. Talk kind of loudly over the edge. So
people talk to the group.
Okay, as far as what we are, you were talking about, how sex and masculine and feminine are separate, we kind of had a cultural dimension to that. One lady in our group said in India how men would be sitting... She had a son who went to India, and men would be sitting on other men's laps and holding hands and talking. And that seemed like, to us, a very feminine, I mean, even not even feminine, over further to but it was very normal in their culture. And for me, I lived in Japan for a couple years, and people were very much, they kept that stuff, you know, outside public domain. But I went to Seoul for a little trip, and I saw women holding hands in the subway, you know, very sisterly-like. And so that was kind of a interesting, you know, maybe there's a cultural side to it too, not just masculine.
Certainly.
And know that the stuff we've been talking about, this is all research on American audiences. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Everything, and quite recent. Go back 10 years and it would probably look very different. So.
Okay, any stories about...
Get to the point story. My boss is a woman, but she's also a feminine language user.
Well, get to the point.
You have to have all these details to understand. And in our staff meetings, when she has changed something in the agency, she spends a lot of time talking about the things that led up to the change and the factors and all that kind of stuff. And so by the time she gets to the real point, the men in the agency have sort of clicked off, and they're usually the ones that afterwards are asking the women, what did she say? What was the... And the women are translating for them.
Well, I'll just add a similar one that most of the people that I work with are women, and in our staff meetings, my boss is a woman too, and in our staff meetings, there was a time when I was extremely frustrated because I thought they were just dragging on endlessly and getting nowhere. So I finally convinced my boss that we ought to have an agenda posted beforehand and people could write down things they wanted to talk about, and then we could get more to the point and get things solved. And we tried that for a little while, and my frustration was still high, and everybody else was getting even more frustrated because they felt I was pushing. And so the boss finally just said to me very bluntly, look, we're not going to use an agenda. We don't have to solve problems. We're going to talk about problems, and if they last a long time, that's okay. But you have to get used to listening to everybody else. And not solve the problem.
That's nice. I hear three of them now.
Yeah.
And two of us in that group said, well, there must be a solution to that.
Thereby self-identifying yourselves as master thinkers. We're about 5 minutes over today. I'm sorry, that's the thing I was going to say, is we started about 5 minutes late, so if you need to leave right at the bottom of the hour, go ahead. We have an extra 5 minutes of tape because we started a little late, so we have time for more stories.
I had a similar situation. It's connected in a way. One night I came home and I was just really upset, and all I wanted to do was talk about what happened. And every few minutes, my husband would pop in with, well, can't you think about this, or can't you do this? And I finally looked at him, and I shook him, and I said, I just need you to listen to me. And, you know, he still couldn't listen. He could not just listen to it without fixing it. And when I told the story in our group, one of the men said, well, then why even talk about it? You know, I don't know how to explain that, but other than I just feel like I need to sometimes, without having it fixed, just being able to talk about it. And someone said, well, it's cathartic. It's
like really belching. As a friend of mine said, you feel better for doing it, and that's not intelligible for everybody around. Sorry, maybe a bad analogy. Yes, one response to why I keep doing it is because I need to do it.
Is the problem that if a man fixes it, they won't have anything to talk about anymore?
I got that.
I don't think so. Does somebody want to respond to it? Go ahead.
My response to that is I find the same thing, but what I do is I tell the story that I want to tell, and then before any response can be made, I tell them what to say. I make him repeat it. So she's going to get stressed out and worried, oh no, what does she want from me?
I'll let you
get it. Can you give an example?
Yeah.
I'll say, geez, what would I say? I make him say something like, no, honey, you look really beautiful today. You're so wonderful. How could you think that about yourself? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't want him to tell me how to fix it. I'm perfectly capable of fixing it myself. Mm-hmm. So when he tells me how to fix it, he's telling me I'm stupid. Mm-hmm.
So it can be heard as very condescending when people tell you how to fix things. I would imagine... I don't remember now. Never mind. I'm going to ask that question later, maybe, if it doesn't come up. I've got a couple hands. Here. Okay.
If a man is alone in the forest and there are no women around, is he still wrong?
I sense a tone shift here. I'll get out the weapons box.
Do you just need to vent, or are we looking for a solution? Mm-hmm. I don't always remember to do that, but I do discover that I want to jump in and fix even when it's not appropriate.
I have a question then for men.
Or users of a masculine style.
For instance, you. When you, do you ever bring something to someone when all you want to do is talk about it, or do you only bring it if you're looking for a solution?
I have to allow myself to just talk about my feelings and vent, because usually when I talk to someone, it's problem-solving mode.
So you are working on a solution.
Yeah.
No, are you talking to me? A lot of the time you just vent to me, and I never know whether you want me to so I don't know. It's hard to know.
Let's say last story.
Okay, last story.
Oh,
at least in this room.
It's not really a story, but our group just thought that perhaps the feminine masculine, even beyond the male female, is being very divisive, and that maybe we as a society need to start thinking in terms of different words to use for those traits. Because I think the younger generation is definitely in tune with both feminine and masculine, as we've so called them, historically, traits, and are able to cooperate and work with them. And so I think even in this room, we're seeing a lot of polarization just because of the words.
Great. Can I do what I'm doing
now? Yeah,
then instead, I was going to do this after Jeff did the next part, but that's a wonderful segue. This exercise, very much like the one that I talked about yesterday afterward, too. The danger of exercises like this is what we do is we point out where we are polarized, and we do look at the differences. Even if we start this whole day talking about what makes us the same, we do an exercise like this, and all of us are able to do our jokes and laugh and say, yeah, you know, look at these people who speak this other language, and look at where we have all these problems, and we can demean one another and not find our common ground. Where we're going from here in the next 2 days is to do just what you're talking about. How can we, as, and we're looking at it as a Christian community, tomorrow particularly we'll be looking at it from that viewpoint. Now that we know gender is something that's cultural, it's something we're taught, it's something that, you know, is modeled for us, it's all of these things, it's not very biological. There might be a little bit of biological influence, but not much. So we have a whole lot of choice about this. So how as Christians can we faithfully live with one another so that those things don't separate us, so that those things aren't set in stone in a way that we hurt each other and damage each other and keep each other away from each other? There's my view. Okay, and there are going to be a lot of variations within that. But that's what we want to talk about tomorrow and the next day and tomorrow night. We're going to have a forum tomorrow night. I'm going to do a quick plug for it to talk about how is the church responding to these things. And tomorrow we'll be talking about how as Christians we can respond. We'll be talking about the church and community, and also, actually tomorrow night's forum is going to be
kind of wide open.
It's going to be pretty open. We're going to let people talk about how that wants to work out. And then on the last day, we're going to be talking about, so what does this mean about how we raise our children and the children in our communities, and how do we faithfully do those things? So that's a wonderful segue. I think the separations part is what is, there are more jokes written about men and women and masculine, feminine separation than there are about almost anything. So.
Can I just stand next to you?
Yeah.
What we'd love for you to take away from today is to recognize that there really are two different languages, and that we're immersed in them all the time. They kind of shape us. And that if we can develop a sense of respect for the validity of each of the languages, not necessarily that you want to totally switch languages, but maybe it behooves us to avoid some unnecessary tension in our friendships and relationships, to at least treat the other way of speaking as having a purpose. It's a different purpose than yours, but it must have a purpose. So maybe it's got some validity, and perhaps even go so far as to learn that language and develop some changes in your style. For instance, the thing that you mentioned and that we mentioned too about just saying something like, am I listening now or do you want a response? That's a way of sort of doing some cross-cultural communication with your mate, but that's maybe something pretty easy to do that we're called to do. Recognize that care is expressed in different ways if you're a masculine user or feminine user, and maybe just have to listen a little harder to hear us caring for each other. So we're going to hear a lot more from you in the next 2 days, and we look forward to that. Thanks for coming.